is room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. Dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world.
Welcome, folks, here in the Corporation Nation, here on Republic Broadcasting. We are continuing today from John's show. If you missed John's show today, which was the National Intel Report right before mine, you might want to check it, because it was the first part of a two-part interview that we're having today with Rebecca Roth. Rebecca Roth, her website is Methodical Illusion. That's Methodical Illusion, I-L-L, Illusion, .com. And her book, by the same name, is, let's just say it's going like wildfire right now. We have some serious distribution on this thing. And that's a good thing, because what Rebecca is bringing to the table is sort of a new, a fresh perspective on the 9/11 mystery. All the equations have sort of come together in her mind. Now, just a brief introduction, because we just had 2 hours of Rebecca. She was a flight attendant purser for internationally for one of the major airlines, of course, for 30 years, and during 9/11. She retired in 2004, I'm pretty sure. And she, like so many of us, slowly came through the awakening process, started asking the hard questions about 9/11. And what she has done is she's written what's often referred to as a historical fiction, right? So one of the best ways I've seen people to present real facts and get people who otherwise wouldn't actually listen, otherwise wouldn't actually read about the facts, that are the questions surrounding 9/11. One of the best ways to do that is to create a story where, and a good story at that, where the characters and the facts are explained in the fiction, but they are the reality. Of course, the best science fiction writers out there always do their due diligence and create the most factual story they can through the outlet of fiction. With that, welcome back, Rebecca. I hope you had a nice little break there.
Okay, so are you back?
We are back.
Sorry about that. I slid back into my chair. I had my microphone muted in case my kitty cat was meowing.
Understood. I was listening to the show there for the last 2 hours. Hopefully the majority of our audience has. Again, if you missed the first 2 hours with John and Rebecca, you can go back to the archives and listen in. And you guys talked about a lot of the stuff. Some of the stuff we haven't heard before. A lot of the stuff is the same rhetoric that the 9/11 truth movement has been putting forth in one way or the other. I want to get into some of the stuff. Now, I know you put this book out, or you wrote it more than, it was about 2 years, correct? You had the book out, actually, or you had it written 2 years ago? Are you on mute? All right.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. I don't know how it got back on mute. I had it written about 2 years ago in a very rough format, because when I was writing it, I was seeing it as a movie, so I was typing as fast as I could, and I had it printed. It was on a Word document, too, but it was printed in the corner of my room, a year and a half to 2 years.
I didn't know
what to do with the information. I honestly thought that... At first, I thought it'd be a drone strike. I thought, how am I going to deliver this? How can I share this? How can I get it out without being Andrew Breitbarted or Michael Hastinged?
Good point.
get my drift. And sure. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I mean, my husband knew what I discovered. He actually was with me when we were doing the flight math. And when I discovered the location that all four planes were taken, I physically got sick. Because I was so close to being on one, and the airline industry, as you know, because you were a part of it, is such a tight family. It doesn't matter what airline you work for. We all know each other like we're family. It's like right now I probably have 100 flight attendants or more that I could just pick up my computer and email and say, hey, I'm going to be in your town. You got a place to stay and I'll feed you. You know, it's like I've got sisters in every city now and every country and every state that have come forward because.
Absolutely.
They're all kind of saying the same thing. I wonder why nobody ever figured this out before, why nobody came forward with this from the airline. And there's a couple reasons for that I discovered. Besides losing your job and your pension, the FAA was able to create fake flight paths. So everybody went, you know, running down to Cleveland. And they claimed the planes went someplace where they didn't go. And that's what PTEC and the MITRE Corporation were actually doing inside the FAA headquarters for 2 years. On that day, they were making things appear and disappear on radar screens for both the FAA and NORAD for the military war game exercises that were ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they were able to make those, send everybody off to Cleveland and out to Albany and all of that crazy stuff that they did. And I truly did believe that too because I trusted the FAA until I discovered PTEC and MITRE company in the FAA and what they were actually doing that day.
Yeah, I definitely want to cover those two because there seems to be a whole corporate structure that's pretty frightening, what you refer to as a shadow government, the shadow government in the corporate structure. Let's step back for a moment. Let's consider the whole advocacy movement out there. You know, you call it the 9/11 truth movement. You have engineers, you have teachers, you have all kinds of pilots for 9/11 truth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Every single one of them seems to have a different truth now, don't they?
They truth, do, actually.
Truth is a funny word.
It's very interesting. I was just telling my husband this because after the book came out, I was contacted by not only numerous pilots from both those airlines involved and other airlines as well, air traffic controllers, physicists, MUFON people that ran large corporations in this country that are some of the top brains in the nation, and lots of aeronautical engineers. And you know what they said? You figured this out. And if you don't have your ego on a string or on your computer screen, that's what most people say, because there is no way that anybody can rebut this. They haven't even tried. But what happens in the truth movement, quote unquote, especially people that are sitting on Facebook, they have their own rendition of truth, or they're drilling in on where the towers went with Judy Wood, Dr. Judy Wood. Or some other holograms, no planes, trick photography, something or other. They get off on their little tangent. They just drill into it over and over and over and over. And that becomes their life. And I feel like I've burned down their tavern.
A lot of them won't even
talk about this because they don't want to know.
I'm sure that they call you names. There's a lot of infighting because, you know, when you battle truth against truth, that's like religion against religion. So I understand. And as, you know, I'll be the first to admit I was a We Are Changer and I was all about the 9/11 thing. And, until I realized nobody seemed to have the same story and everybody had different facts that they called their truth. And it's a very difficult place to lay your, you know, to try to lay your head, because you don't know. Everybody seems to be different. They're, over here, you have someone that's planted. I know I was in two groups where we had a little, if you will, agent provocateurs that drew apart the groups. And you know, it's just, it's that kind of thing. It's such a touchy subject with some people who are, as you say, in cognitive dissonance, etc. But, well, so let's talk about this. Now, you got into with John a little bit about the nature of this system that is now, from what I understand, on every plane, which is the, what's it called? It's called the flight termination system, I believe.
That's correct. And at the time of 9/11, the flight termination system was a plug-in device sold to Boeing by SPC, Dobbs Zachheim's Corporation. And this is the same device that runs our drones across the world. So that's still in working. In around 2006 or 8, I'm not quite sure which year that was, because it didn't really matter to what I was looking into. Boeing came out with their own rendition of this, and there is a patent on it, and it's autopilot disruptor or something. They give it something. It's not called the flight termination system anymore, but at the time of 9/11, that's what it was. But yes, and George Bush made it mandatory that this remote control device is on every American U.S. carrier, every U.S. Commercial plane.
And again, the point here, John asked a pertinent question, and you said absolutely not, and that was, could this explain the dramatic flying techniques that suddenly these Arabs were able to acquire to fly those planes into the buildings? And you said absolutely not. The purpose of this is not to guide them, you know, into a building, but to guide them gently back into whatever the destination that's programmed into the guidance system is.
That's great. It was basically, the flight termination system was designed in the event of a hijacking, that the plane could be taken over remotely and landed safely. That's what the device did, and that's what it did on 9/11. It took over, and once that flight termination system took over, the pilots lost all control or all communication. They also lost control of the aircraft. So here they are, if you think about this, they are, you know, let's say 13 minutes after takeoff, is from what I found in some research I've done since the book came out, and all of a sudden they're not climbing anymore, and they've got the aircraft and the autopilot scheduled to climb to cruise altitude, and it's not happening. All of a sudden, boom, next thing they know, the aircraft is descending, and the aircraft is not responding to them, pulling on the yoke or doing anything else. They can't flip the autopilot off, because the autopilot's already under control of the flight termination system. So the reason the pilots didn't squawk 7500 is they thought they were having some kind of weird mechanical, and their aircraft was going down, and they didn't know why, and they were trying to get it to go back up like they were thought they were supposed to do. So that's they, not only do they lose ability to talk to anybody, but they, I'm sure, were busy freaking out, thinking, what the heck is going on with this plane? And so once they were landed, then the handlers on board told them that they were part of a drill, and they either had cell phone jammers or they asked everybody to turn in their cell phone out of their pocket so that nobody could communicate. They pulled two people off each aircraft until they got to Flight 93, and then they pulled about a dozen people off. They pulled the two flight attendants off Flight 11. There were three people that called in off Flight 175. Two people called in off Flight 77. And I don't know, I think it's 11 people that called in off Flight 93. And the rest of those passengers were more than likely the pepper spray or mace that was used was probably hydrogen cyanide, something that would kill them in about 2 to 3 minutes. And they shut the door.
So now this is... this is one of those things. Now, here we're delving into the area where people have a hard time coming around and believing. You know, again, like you said, there's the no planers and there's the planers. There's the there's the Judy Wood followers and there's the other followers. There's all kinds of different things out there. Now, let's focus. So the question becomes, if these planes were taken, guided into a plane, and you said that this hangar, if I'm not mistaken, was in Massachusetts?
That's correct. Remember that the flight attendants on Flight 11 were on the phone 18 minutes within departure from Boston Logan Field.
Couldn't have been Cleveland, yeah. Could it?
I actually map it out real well in the book, and I teach people how to use a website that's available to the public to check my work, not just with those two flights, because that timing works. What I used for the basis of all of this was the calls. the information that was made on the calls and whether the calls came in from a cell phone or not and what they were saying. And then I took it up against the FAA and the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, and what they said the aircraft were doing in altitude and attitude, whether they were descending, whether they were descending at 6 to 10,000 feet a minute, whether they were climbing, or whether, you know, whatever they were claiming the plane was doing on board. And then I would match out the timeline with the phone calls and what was being said, how it was being said, whether was there any jet background sound, were there any passengers screaming. If an airplane's coming out of the sky 10,000 feet a minute, you want to know that everyone on that board is scared. Oh, I almost said the word L-E-S-S. They are scared to death, and they are screaming, and they are not going to be quiet. So all of those phone calls, as I gathered, the receivers of the phone calls, especially all on Flight 93, all mentioned, nobody asked them, but they mentioned, it was so quiet on the other end, I couldn't hear any background noise, no other voices, no commotion, no screaming, no jet sound. It was as if they were in the room next to me. And so I was listening to everything that was being said and putting all of that together. And like I said earlier, if you spray pepper spray or mace or any kind of gas inside a pressurized cabin at altitude, the pilots get it.
Circulated air.
Yeah, everyone's going to be having it, and you're going to all have it, you know, pretty bad. So that those two flight attendants were sitting in the last row coach or in the last jump seat at door 3R. They never showed any signs of pepper spray or mace and having problems breathing or seeing or anything else. So. Just told me the planes weren't pressurized. And by the way, a lot of the things that were said on those phone calls, I started writing little cue cards and keeping track of who was saying what. Because, one, they weren't following protocol by making the phone calls anyway. Hijackers, the flight attendants should not be making phone calls during a hijacking period. That's a great way to get shot in the head. Because in the case this was, here's what was happening. The aircraft were taken over remotely by the flight termination system from the SBC Corporation. And I'm going to remind you again, Dov Zakheim, Rabbi Dov Zakheim, owned that company, was the CEO of that company. He was also the comptroller of the United States Pentagon under investigation for misplacing $2.3 trillion. Another interesting note about him. Dov Zakheim also had a company that was a subsidiary of SBC Corporation called TriData. TriData got the rebuilding contract from the 1993 World Trade Center tower bombing. He had the blueprints for both towers at TriData, his company. He also had another company that was a group of people that what they did was they converted commercial 767s aircraft into military refueling tankers and sold them to militaries around the world. He's kind of connected to the entire event. This is the United States Comptroller of the Pentagon, Rabbi Dov Zakheim. He went to work after this for Booz Allen Hamilton. If you know anything about what's going on in the Middle East right now, Booz Allen Hamilton is where Edward Snowden went to work.
Right. The the notion, so what becomes hard for people to, and let me just give you a few examples, folks. If this is hard for you to believe, 1987, Department of Defense admits that despite a treaty banning research and development of biological agents, it continues to operate research facilities at 127 facilities and universities around the nation. In 1990, more than 1,500 six-month-old black and Hispanic babies in Los Angeles were given an experimental measles vaccine that had never been licensed for use in the United States. The CDC later admits the parents were never informed that the vaccine being injected into their children was experimental. 1994, Senator John D. Rockefeller issues a report revealing that for at least 50 years, the Department of Defense has used hundreds of thousands of military personnel in human experiments and for intentional exposure to dangerous substances. Materials included mustard and nerve gas, ionizing radiation, psychochemicals, hallucinogens, and drugs used during the Gulf War. Need I mention MKUltra, the CIA's involvement in all of that stuff? You could go on and on and on. There's, if you just type into your search engines, folks, U.S. government admits experimenting on humans, you're going to find all kinds of stuff that's going to shock the hell out of you. So why should you be shocked then that they would land a plane of people and likely assassinate, kill, whatever words you want to put there? Now, that is not as hard to believe for people as the notion that something else hit the towers. We can see the plane crash, so-called, in Gainesville? I can't remember. In the middle of nowhere, that was obviously not a plane. We can see so obviously that the plane did not hit the Pentagon, and that could be cleared up so easily if the film from 83 different cameras that filmed it were just released. Problem solved. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So I think what we have here is as you claimed to have and recognized in yourself, this notion of cognitive dissonance. I cannot believe that our government would do this, or that it would allow another government to do this in conjunction. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe that because it affects my worldview that we're the greatest nation on earth, etc., 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 fly my flag, all that. There's a serious disconnect here, because I don't think most people can imagine that the scenario that you're portraying here could be a reality.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons I let the book sit in the corner, and I really was, I just didn't know what to do. I thought people were just going to throw hate at me. The book came out the middle of November. The end of January, it became the number one position on Amazon in historical fiction. And every single day I get hundreds of emails. I sign off lots of autographed books, and I get hundreds of emails from people thanking me for coming forward and offering other information. Let me just say this. This is an example of some of the information that people are coming to me with. And I don't know if it's because I'm a flight attendant, because I was a flight attendant, or because I'm standing up and saying this. I'm not a government agent, even though some people on Facebook would like me to be one. I'm not. I've certainly point to all the agencies involved in this book. So if you read the book, you're not going to call me a government agent. But I think people are coming forward because they feel safe, and it's a safe place to come. And so if people are listening, you can come to my website, www.methodicalillusion.com, hit contact Rebecca, and you can send me any kind of information you want about your experience at the Pentagon, your experience at the base you were located at, your experience wherever you were, that something you saw that wasn't right and you knew it and you've been holding it in. Here's what happened after one of the main interviews I did the end of January. Someone contacted me on my Facebook or on my website, and they said, I need to talk. And I talked to this person. They were based at the location that the four planes were taken. They were, it was a reserve base. They were called up to go active duty that morning of 9/11. And when we got to the base where the aircraft were, they were not allowed on the base. And it wasn't until she heard my interview that she put two and two together. They were kept off the base for 2 or 3 days. And everyone thought, and there were 2,000 people in her unit, so everyone thought, this is really weird. How come we can't get on our base? And when she heard an interview, when I'm talking about a base now, within 18 minutes from Boston Logan, she said, I knew it. That was my base. I knew what I know, and she told me the name of the base without reading the book or hearing me ever say it. I know there are 2,000 people like that. One of them needs to come forward. And if 100 of them come forward, or 2,000 of them come forward, all the better. Because people are putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and people also are telling me, if I would have heard your interview or read your book 6 months ago, I would never have believed this. But I think with the fact that we've got major media people being busted lying to us for over a decade, that now they're putting the pieces of their puzzle together and saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. And people are also getting their news on alternative news sites. The media, the ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and Fox are not the owners of information, and people now, I think, as part of the wake-up process, are leaving them as a news source and going to the internet, to YouTube, and to other alternative radio sites and that sort of thing. And they're realizing that, you know, when they see things with ISIS, and there's actually a YouTube out that's exactly the same executioner dress that you see in all of these orange jumpsuit beheading videos from a Turkish TV movie. and I have access to the link to that. It's pretty crazy. It's the same background. It's everything. The same jumpsuits. It's the same microphones. It's the same leather straps. It's the same guy. And all of those guys, if you notice, they look like NBA players. If you take a look back at the Egyptian Christians that supposedly were just killed on the beach, those guys were probably 5'6 to 5'8 because that's, you know, very typical of the Egyptian. They're not really usually big people. But the executioners, that's when they had all 21 of them all dressed in black. They're like 7 feet tall. Just, it's just amazing. So people are seeing things like that and they're starting to wake up and they're thanking me for helping them do so. And so I used to think that people in this country weren't ready for this, but I think they're ready now. And maybe I say this, maybe in God's time, my book came out when it needed to. And that's why it sat in the corner for 2 years. And I had to come to a point myself where the truth and helping stop this was more important than my life and being a drone strike and being ended up like Michael Hastings. I don't drink and I don't drive and I'm not suicidal. I'm not depressed at all. But I had to get to a point like that where I realized that even putting this out in a novel because of who's involved and how it was done, and it's so exposed how it was pulled off that, and who all the people are involved. And listen, I dug back into this. I found people from the Iran-Contra, people involved in Pan Am 103. I found everybody involved, and none of them were Arabs.
Yeah, that's you mentioned in the previous show that was one of the first things that woke you up, so to speak, was finding out that at this point we know at least 10 of the so-called hijackers are still alive somehow, and you actually mentioned that you thought the other 9 might have been just faked pictures.
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, that's what I was going to do to grab a person to be in my novel, a first name from one of the hijackers and a last name from one of the others. And I was just going to create my little fantasy. And then after years of research, I had all this stuff up and I thought, well, how am I going to introduce this to someone without blowing them away? How much stuff was involved? I didn't know about the gold, the stolen gold, the Brady bonds that George Bush Sr. had put together that were expiring on September 12, 2001. It was $240 billion worth of fake gold bonds on paper and physical gold that they had to bring into the system. And it's a heavily monitored system. They had to somehow funnel it in. So you'll remember on 9/11. If you're old enough to remember, that on 9/11, they had the SEC went into an emergency mode, remember? Well, that's when they spun the computers out and they were able to manipulate a lot of that kind of fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, so let's... Now, off the air when I was talking to you, and you just mentioned this corporation before, we're actually going to go to a break here pretty quick, but... Okay. You know, there's this whole corporate sort of structure that's going on behind the scenes, and that's what I'm really most interested. One of the companies you mentioned, and you referred to it as literally, if you will, the shadow government. One of those was the MITRE Corporation, M-I-T-R-E Corporation, folks. On just the Wikipedia entry, it says an American not-for-profit organization based in Bedford, Massachusetts, and McLean, Virginia, manages federally funded research and development centers supported by the Department of Defense, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Homeland Security, Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts, on behalf of the federal judiciary, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and the National Institute for Standards and Technology, or NIST. Remember NIST, folks? Remember the bull crap that came out of NIST? Well, what's going on with this corporation that is a not-for-profit that manages all these federal funds? We'll find out when we come back, folks. You might want to look it up. MITRE Corporation. There's a whole corporate structure that we're going to be talking about today. Stay tuned, folks.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils has an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Like water.
Water can flow. Very interesting stuff. So, there's a corporation that I was just introduced to by our guest today, Rebecca Roth. Her website is methodicalillusion.com, also the name of her book. what a trip. MITRE Corporation was formed in 1958 to provide overall direction to the companies and workers involved in the U.S. Air Force SAGE product. Now, if you're not familiar with the SAGE product, Project Semi-Automatic Ground Environment, bunch of big computers, networking equipment, coordinated data from many radar sites. So it's, in other words, it was basically the implementation of the ground, the radar system, the the air traffic control system, etc. Most of the early employees were transferred to the MITRE Corporation from the Lincoln Laboratory and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where SAGE was being developed. In 1959, the site was purchased in Bedford, Massachusetts, near Hanscom Air Force Base, to develop a new MITRE laboratory, which MITRE occupied in September 1959. After the SAGE project ended in early 1960s, the FAA selected MITRE to develop a similar system to provide automated air traffic control. The result of the project formed the National Aerospace System that is still in use today. To support the NAS, National Aerospace System, and continual operations with the U.S. Department of Defense at the Pentagon, MITRE opened a second main office in Virginia, McLean, Virginia. When you say this is sort of a shadow government, if you will, why don't you explain what you mean by that? And how did this company, what did it have to do with this whole 9/11 business?
Well, there's two companies that were really involved in pulling this off. In other words, we had the aircraft taken over by use of the flight termination system in which they landed the aircraft. And since those aircraft at that time lost their transponder, so air traffic control couldn't really see them, but once they lose the transponder, you can still be seen on what's called a primary radar. And that needed to be covered up. And what the PTEC company and the MITRE company were doing for 2 years before 9/11, they were working on what's called interagency compatibility between computer systems for the FAA and NORAD. They use different systems for for the U.S. Navy, Army, all of the branches of the service, the Pentagon, and trying to make them all be able to communicate with each other, because they were all obviously unable to do that, and that's what they were doing, working on interagency compatibility. On the morning of 9/11, what they were doing was they were part of the war game, and so when you send a fighter pilot out, and you got a fake, let's say, MiG fighter that he's supposed to be, you know, pretending to shoot down or you know, chase away or what have you. The guy, shows up on their radar so they could make things appear that weren't there, fake, completely fake enemy planes, blips or targets on the radar. And they were also able to remove the primary data from the four aircraft that were under remote control. Now, you just talked about how the MITRE company was involved with all of the FAA and the satellite technology and the radar technology. Is this all coming together for you now? Mm-hmm. These two companies, that's what they were doing. So once the flight termination system took over these four aircraft, they then created false flight paths for them, completely false. Now, since my book has come out, I have had access to nearly a full terabyte of FAA NORAD data from the Freedom of Information Act, and I have it on an external hard drive. And what am I looking for? I'm looking for something they forgot to cover up. There's also another thing I'm looking for. At about 8:30 in the morning, the military liaison working the Boston Center, which is located in Nashua, New Hampshire, calls North American NORAD, which is their northeast sector, NEADS, and he tells them that Flight 11 has been hijacked. They're pretty sure they have no communication with them. They want to scramble jets. They start that process, and he tells them that he sees them on radar, and they have no transponder, but he sees them going 600 knots. 600 knots is 690 miles an hour. The maximum speed for a 767 is 530 miles an hour, and after that they start having structural damage. Now, when I saw that, I thought, well, how could a military liaison not recognize that a 767 can't fly that fast because it would be flying probably most likely 460 knots or miles an hour, excuse me. Mm. And so they wouldn't be flying 700 miles an hour. The only thing that can do that is a missile and a military aircraft. But yet that's what he claimed he was seeing Flight 11 was doing, but that would be because someone else was showing things on his screen. One of the interesting things about PTEC was a startup company. They were about 3 years old. They were financed by a Lebanese gentleman, a financier, and a Saudi Arabian financier out of the Middle East. And lo and behold, you wouldn't think this could be the case, but their marketing guy was a Jewish attorney. And their marketing guy was good friends with Michael Chertoff. And they, at that point, they were a three-year-old foreign-owned startup company, were into 22 U.S. government computer systems. Now, Promise Software was one of the things that they were most likely using, and Promise Software is from the 1970s, and again in the mid-80s it was stolen by the head of the Israeli defense. His name was Rafi Eitan. He was part of the Israeli Mossad. He stole it from Edwin Meese at the Department of Justice. They then went ahead, the Israeli defenses, and created a backdoor in this software so it enables them to put things into your computer screen remotely or take things off. And as well, they were able to do that with radar screens. That's what PTEC was doing. PTEC had this software called Promise Software. I believe this Promise Software has now become Prism. And maybe it's the 3.0. It's a tracking software to track us. That's really what it was designed for, was to track criminals. But we're all criminals now, I guess, in this police state that we're finding ourselves living in.
Enemies of the state.
We are. It's interesting, isn't it? But, I noticed that when I was still flying, that one of the things that once they formed the Department of Homeland Security and the TSA, the thing everybody really loves, right, they started hiring a bunch of Islamic women and obviously gentlemen too. They were not native English speakers. They spoke with broken, Arabic language, and the women wore hijab head covers. And I thought, well, now this is really weird. We're expected to believe 19 Arab hijackers did this, and now why would they hire them to frisk me as a flight attendant purser going through security? It just didn't make any sense to me. So that told me that probably the government really didn't believe that story about the 19 hijackers. Now I found out why they didn't. I mean, I really did find out that there were no Arabs on the planes.
The storyteller often doesn't believe the story, I guess is the point.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, they want us to believe that a trained assassin, a professional anti-hijack specialist and a hostage rescue person and sitting minding his own business on a business trip that could kill any human being with a credit card and a pen. I'm sure traveling on a business trip from coast to coast, he had a credit card and a pen rather handy. I wasn't able to defend himself over this hijackers. And by the way, one of the things I found in doing this research, because I really did get crazy as that guy in Close Encounters. Here's just some of the guys that, for instance, were the hijackers. And I found that about a dozen of them actually had Florida state driver's license. They don't give their weight, but they do give their height. Here's their height, 5'6", 5'6", 5'9", 5'10", 5'10", 5'7", 5'7", the tallest one, 5'11", 5'7", and 5'8". These are not big men. Now, I did find some other interesting passengers on board, that one was a judo champion, 6'2", 225-pound black belt in judo. And another one was an F-14 Top Gun fighter pilot trained at Miramar Top Gun facility. 6'2", 225 pounds. His friends all said he could kill any human being with his hands. Both of these gentlemen sat on two flights. One was on flight 175 and one was on flight 93. Much like our assassin on flight 11, they did nothing against these 5'6", 5'7", 5'8" hijackers. That's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, if you sit and look at this, like I did, I thought, well, what the heck? I mean, And let me tell you what happened right after 9/11. Every man that came on board, I was usually the purser, so I was at the door. They said, if anybody gives you trouble, let me know. I will kick the bejesus out of them. I'll take them down. We had, plastic handcuffs and stuff. It's like, nobody's going to get away with anything. And I think that would have happened on Flight 11 or on September 11th as well. If the passengers on Flight 93 were expected to believe that the crew members who train for this, that's what we do. We train for hijackings, water landings, ditchings, emergency landings where the nose gear collapses, the foam in the runway.
You know, I think that's important to note here, that the flight attendants, they go through some serious training. You have to learn the specs for all the different planes. You have to know the exits. You have to do a routine. I mean, people really actually think that you serve drinks and that's about it. You know, drinks and crappy food. No offense.
I had someone say that to me when I first released the book on Facebook. So what do you know? You're a flight attendant.
Exactly. But no, people need to understand these people are privy to, I was a gate agent. We are privy to a lot of information. And these flight attendants, they have to go through some severe, severe training.
One of the things we're trained for is to pay attention to detail and to look at, see if people are acting suspicious. Because if this happens while you're on the ground, you can get off the plane. I mean, if you've got a hijacker, potential hijacker, and he looks at you sideways and you get that feeling, you stop all production. You get him off the plane right now. I don't like this person. I don't get a good feeling. There's something wrong. And we are trained to use that sense that obviously no one used on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only that, there's another thing that really was crazy for me. We are in command. I know if you've ever flown on a commercial plane, we show you where the bathrooms are and the red and white lights are and the window exits and all of that stuff. And we show you how to use your seatbelt and your oxygen mask and all of those things. Well, that's our job. And we're also trained in a hijack situation. We do this, 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 and this, and we do not ever do this, this, and this. So when I was seeing them doing the opposite thing they should have and saying things that weren't right, that they weren't given the right details out, but the thing that really threw it apart for me was on Flight 93 specifically, that was the last flight that went into Shanksville, Pennsylvania, the box that sits between the captain and the co-pilot is the onboard computer, and we were very, very careful if we handed either pilot a drink, a beverage in a glass, even because you never know when you're going to have turbulence, and because you could be having your glass over the computer and boom, a tablespoon or two or more could come out and you've got the China syndrome on board. The computer is in trouble. And so when we hand the captain a drink, for instance, we would tell him, "Captain, here is your cup of coffee on your left shoulder," and we'd pass it around by the window. So we don't even pass liquids over that box because it's a computer. And so I thought to myself, well, this is nonsensical. If you're listening to the official story of 9/11 on Flight 93, the flight attendants, two of them call out at the last minute where the plane is supposed to be upside down coming out of the sky at 10,000 feet. They're claiming that the passengers are going to take over the cockpit, taking four pots of hot water or coffee up there and going to burn those guys that are in the seat. Well, one, the plane was upside down. Two, it was coming out of the sky at 10,000 feet a minute. And three, no flight attendant would ever let the passengers take over in any emergency situation, and they would never let pots of hot water go into a cockpit.
And to be clear, you're speaking from your specific job, but this is uniform. This is not something, this is from the FAA. This is you're basically the messenger, if you will. You're trained to do things according to the uniform rules of all airlines. So what you're saying would not be different than, differently applied on any other airline.
That's correct. Every single airplane flying around right now, that box between the captain and the co-pilot is their onboard flight computer. It doesn't do well with liquid.
Well, and I guess another point to make is, folks, when you're flying on an airplane, you're going across the country. The pilots are, it's not like you're on a bus, although it feels like it sometimes feels worse than a bus. But, those pilots aren't up there flying the plane like you would consider a bus driver driving a bus. You know, they set that autopilot. And that autopilot takes them to almost the point where they're ready to land. This would not be any different than what we were mentioning before, which is that flight termination sequence where the plane is taken over. It's all digital. It's all very easy to remote control these planes. So if you have a tough time imagining that a plane could be remote controlled, you shouldn't. And again, you referred to the, it's the same system that is on the drones that are being currently being deployed all around us, right?
Our drones are being flown by operators at Creech Air Force Base north of Las Vegas, and the plane itself, the drone itself, is in Afghanistan, Oman, Yemen, Pakistan, wherever we happen to find a wedding party that we want to get rid of, or school. I shouldn't laugh, but I mean,
it's horrible, but yeah,
we're drone striking wedding parties in elementary schools, and that's how they're doing it. It is actually a device. It looks kind of like an old pinball machine, and it's a computer screen inside, like a chair is hooked to it. And if you go to SPC Corporation, they actually have them, so you can see what the drone operators actually sit and fly these using the flight termination system. I believe they're still in process. They also have a mobile control unit that can control 8 aircraft at one time, where we had 4 of them going on 9/11 under control. They could have been doing that from any mobile unit, and it looks much like a box truck, like a van, or a little bit bigger than a van, like a small U-Haul truck, like a box like that on the back. You can see it. There's pictures of it, so you can see what it looks like, because you'll see, if you look real close at a lot of 9/11 videos, you'll see white box trucks like that driving away from the Pentagon and other places.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, stay tuned, folks. We will be right back.
Woo! Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead. Pull the trigger.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. Escapeharassment.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
Heart problems were in my family, and I did notice these chest pains occasionally. I decided to try it, and I don't think I'm going to stop for quite a while. Nothing has worked as well as this product has promised to. I've taken, you know, supplements and that sort of thing, and never really noticed a difference.
Well, I turned 60, and when I went into the doctor to get my reports, the lady at the desk, she looked at it, and she says, "Wow." I says, "What's that say?" So she came back and looked at my last check. She says, "Well, you've gone down half on your cholesterol." So she says, "I guess don't do a thing, only what you're doing right now."
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from takefromcaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at takefromcaesar.us.
Scientists have been battling to understand what this unappealing object is all about.
Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems.
Dear John, last section, last show. We've had Rebecca on for the last 3 hours now, and I sure appreciate you doing this marathon with us. I know it's got to be taxing to do that much. Rebecca Roth is our guest. Methodicalillusion.com. That's methodicalillusion.com. That is the name of her book, which, by the way, is... I'm very pleased to say, from what I understand, one of the best-selling books, or number one best-selling book right now on Amazon, in whatever category that is. We are doing a little fundraiser here at the station. Rebecca has graciously agreed to sign and personalize some books for anyone who donates. I believe it's $100 to the station. You can go to the donation tab on the RBN website, or you can call in 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719 and make a donation. Just make sure you include your address in the comment section there on PayPal so we know where to send it. Anyway, Rebecca, You just to be clear now, you said that your book is doing really well at the moment, which I'm very glad to hear, because the more this can get out, the better. Mm-hmm. And especially to people who are not part of this whole alternative spectrum quite yet. How's the book doing?
It is doing great. It's been in the number one position on Amazon in the historical fiction category, which is where I put it, because it is based on my world, my life, and also based on a real historical event, 9/11. And you'll learn a lot of things if you just, like I did, I just saw what they showed on TV. I had no idea of the put options and the gold bonds and the stolen gold and insurance fraud. I mean, you name it. There was a lot of stuff going on that day the media just didn't tell us about. So I have the first three chapters on my website, which is just methodicalillusion.com. And so if you order a book, you can get an autographed copy just off the website also. And order is one. If you want to buy them in bulk, you can also do that. And there's a great price break if you get, you know, more than a dozen books, like 24. We have people buying cases are 24. We have people buying 24, 48, and up to like almost 100 books, 96 books at once, handing out to their friends and family. Lots of airline people are buying this and coming forward and thanking me for it and reading it and enjoying it and saying, you figured it all out. This is the missing piece of the puzzle. So when you see the cover, that's kind of why that all came together as the cover of the book. But you can get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or any bookstore can order it for you. It comes in about a week. And it's just been truly amazing what the amount of people that have come forward and admit that they wouldn't have accepted this even 6 months ago. Some say a year, but a lot of them are like, 6 months ago. But there, people are feeling that they're being lied to. And it's time for the truth, and people know that. And so their discernment is now starting to pick through the lies that the media is pushing out, and people are waking up to this control and this mind manipulating stuff that the CIA does through their television. And Ian, that includes your commercials. These same people that are involved with the military industrial complex are also involved with the large pharmaceutical companies. And now that we have Obamacare, you don't have a choice. You're going to have to pay into that, and that they're all intertwined.
Yeah. So, I see that's part of MITRE as well. The, oh, it was something on... Oh, the CMS Alliance to Modernize Healthcare. Wonderful. That's in MITRE. We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned.
With financial uncertainty...